Next, we'll hear from five judges, council members, for their liaison reports to other two counties. We'll start with Judge Stephen Baker.
Where's Steve?
Did you want us to use the...
Good morning, Chief, fellow council members. I'm liaison to Tehama County. I visited Tehama County last week and sat down with three of their four judges. Prior to that, I had several months ago, I went down to Tehama County and had lunch with their CEO and toured their facilities down there. Tehama County has 4.3 authorized positions. In the last judicial needs assessment, they're allotted deemed to need 5.9 judicial positions. When I showed up in Tehama County, I pulled up in front of the courthouse, parked in a shady spot, not metered, and walked into the courthouse. It's a beautiful courthouse. Did not have to go through any weapons screening facilities. Walked straight into the CEO's office and then met with these three judges. These three judges are very new judges to our branch with less than 2 years' experience. Despite that fact, they have a very sophisticated understanding of the issues facing our branch. Due to the size of that court, they're all sort of jacks of all trades. The demographics of Tehama County, they have four judges. It's a big county, much like Shasta, just 30 miles south of Shasta. They have about 3,000 square feet or square miles there, and about 65,000 people, so it's a very small place. Currently, they have four facilities. They have a shared courthouse with the county. They have a state-owned facility, which does have a weapons screening facility. They have a facility in Corning, which is closing in just a few days. They have a juvenile justice facility as well. Like most counties, they've been very badly affected by the budget crisis. In the last 5 years, their staff has been reduced from 44 down to about 34 people. They liken this to an episode out of the Twilight Zone where all the lights are on but nobody's home. They've reduced employee wages and benefits. They've reduced their hours. Currently, they run public hours from 8 to 4 p.m. Monday through Thursday and 8 to 3 o'clock on Fridays. Of course, the staff and judges are there much longer than those hours. As I mentioned, the Corning facility, which serves the south end of the county, will close in just a few days. That's a facility that's been open for quite a number of years. So those are the bad news issues from Tehama County. Some good news, they are a 1407 project. They'll be getting a new courthouse in that county. They hope to move in December of 2016. The working drawings are expected to be done this fall. They have concerns about the end product with that new courthouse facility. It's deemed to be sort of a demonstration project. But they're very enthusiastic about moving into that new facility when it's been completed. They are very pleased about the new budget allocation methodology. They will benefit greatly from that new methodology. They hope the council will continue to focus on appropriate funding in the future. In closing, the biggest concerns that the judges expressed from Tehama County is their computer system, getting current updated computer systems and a case management system that they can use. They're enthusiastic about electronic filing, which, as Justice Ashman Gerst mentioned, is on the agenda as item C. They'll be very happy about that. And, of course, security is a concern of theirs. And as I mentioned, the main courthouse, very ornate courthouse with two courtrooms in it, does not even have weapon screening at this time. We had a great discussion about politics, and despite the fact that this is a very young bench. They have a, I was impressed by what a sophisticated understanding they have about the issues and challenges facing our branch. Very intellectual group and a very enthusiastic group. I'm sure we can expect to see them on advisory committees and maybe on the council in the future. Tehama County is the county where our friend Judge Dennis Murray comes from. So they have a great consciousness about statewide issues in Tehama County. And you'll all remember Dennis was a very very active member of our council before he retired a few years ago. He still continues to sit on assignment in that county. They were they're very inspired by our chief and her vision and leadership. And, of course, the newer judges there all relatively recently went through the NJO program. And, Chief, they were very impressed by your the warm welcome that you give the NJO folks. And they are big fans of yours. So they were very inspired by also by the visit in this liaison program. And they promised that they'll stay in touch with me on issues of statewide importance, and that concludes my report.
Thank you, Judge Baker. Next, we'll hear from Judge Jim Brandlin reporting on Riverside County Superior Court.
Thank you, Chief. I visited the Riverside Superior Court on May the 24th, and I met with the presiding judge, Mark Cope, the assistant presiding judge, Harold Hopp, executive officer, Sherry Carter, and most of the judicial officers of the Riverside Superior Court were engaged in a training session at the Marietta Courthouse. I found them to be engaging, an intelligent, and thoughtful group of bench officers. As we all know, the Riverside Superior Court is a severely under-resourced court. Their population and workload has expanded at a much faster rate than most of the courts in California. There are 2.2 million people who reside in Riverside County, and according to the AOC's judicial workload analysis in December of 2012, they had a total of 76 judicial officers and should have had 138 judicial officers, which is 62 fewer than what they should have had based on their workload data. They had a deficit that exceeded $20 million and have had to lay off employees, cut hours, close courtrooms, and courthouses just to make ends meet. Currently, they are down 5 judicial positions that are authorized and funded. While that number of vacant judge positions may not seem like a lot in LA, it represents approximately 10% of their allocated judge workforce, which is half of what they should have based on their workload. Riverside is a large and somewhat rural county that's been hard hit by the Great Recession and the dramatic cuts in the judicial budget. In the last 5 years, they've had to close 3 courthouses, namely Autry, Corona, and Hawthorne. And just recently, they had to close the Temecula facility, resulting in long travels for their residents to obtain judicial services. Their judicial officers are a hardy bunch, but they have fears that because they've done an incredible job struggling to keep their heads above water for so long, that somehow our sister branches of government will think that this workload is now doable and this will become the new norm. They are concerned for their staff in handling a caseload far above their capacity. They are appreciative of the support they have received from the AOC and the Judicial Council, but they did have questions, concerns, and some criticisms. The judges wanted to know why, despite the fact that they are a severely under-resourced court, they must wait 5 years or more for more equitable funding under the new funding model. They wanted to know whether at the end of the 5 years, they would be capped at 50% of the historic model and 50% of the new model, or they would continue to receive additional funding. I gave my opinion that the unanimous agreement of all judicial council members and the recommendation of the advisory committee that recommended this funding model, we all recognize the struggle to balance equities and prepare courts for the significant shift in judicial branch allocations, and that accelerating the process much faster would not provide those courts that would receive less funding with adequate time for adjustments. They wanted to know how much additional new funding revenue the judicial branch would need to receive in order to provide 100% funding under the new allocation model. This was a question I was not qualified to answer, but fortunately I knew this question was coming, so I asked Judge Earl for her opinion, and I was told it was approximately $700 to $800 million in new funding to the branch to be able to provide 100% funding under the new allocation model. While the new funding model will help Riverside, it alone will not provide complete restoration for the severe cuts they have felt over the last 5 years or their significant increase in caseload. There was some concern on the part of several of their judicial officers that the Judicial Council may be slightly tone-deaf in its decision to approve a telecommuting policy when courts across the state are laying off employees. I explained that there was some disagreement in the boardroom over this subject, and that, in my opinion, the decision to permit the telecommuting policy to move forward was because the new policy was much more restrictive and provided greater oversight than the previous ad hoc policy. In addition, the new proposal required approval by the department head and the administrative director for each individual employee who requested it. Also, this proposal was adopted as a pilot project that required the ADOC to provide the council with periodic reviews, including one that we just recently received, and a final report which must provide a justified business model for continuing the policy after 1 year. The Riverside judges asked the council to seek assistance from the executive branch by having the governor expeditiously fill the 5-judge vacancies as soon as possible. They're all also asking for help in priority assignments from the assigned judges program and staff support to assist those assigned judges. Lastly, it was pointed out to me that they have 29 open special circumstances potential death penalty cases in a county with only 55 authorized judges. And they also have a need for the creation of complex civil courts to process their caseload. I would ask this council and the AOC to provide the Riverside Superior Court with any and all assistance that we can. In closing, I want to say that first, when I retire as a judge in 4 to 5 years, I would be honored to sit as an assigned judge with this group of dedicated judicial officers. And lastly, that I hope they will allow me back in their county now that L.A. has enticed their incredible executive officer, Sherry Carter, to work for L.A.'s team. That concludes my report. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Judge Branlin. I invite Judge Jacobson to report on San Francisco Superior Court.
Thank you. Cynthia Lee invited me to come and visit on June 11th, 2013. And I had a very, very good visit with her. She gave me most of the afternoon. I'm going to follow sort of a good news, bad news scenario and start with the bad news. The budget reductions have absolutely and deeply harmed the San Francisco Superior Court. In September of 2011, they closed 11 courtrooms, laid off 67 employees, including 18 commissioners. Their staffing in fiscal year 2008-2009 was about 585 staff members. They now have 413. Their clerk's office runs on reduced hours. Their clerk's office used to be open from 8 in the morning until 5:30 in the afternoon. Now it's 8:30 in the morning until 4 p.m. Their IT budget has been cut by 50%. and they're struggling with an obsolete case management system, but absolutely cannot afford a new one. In terms of one of the most direct aspects of access to justice, they had a very well-developed and sophisticated self-help program. They previously had two self-help centers. Both ran 5 days a week, full-time. They had one devoted to family law matters and one for all other types of cases. Now they have one self-help center open, and that center is only open 3 days a week. Pursuant to these layoffs, about half of their self-help staff was laid off. They're no longer able to provide one-on-one assistance in divorce cases. They're no longer able to offer help, self-help on unlawful detainer cases or in credit card dispute cases. They're no longer able to offer self-help in guardianship or conservatorship of the person cases. They're no longer able to offer self-help on step-parent adoption cases or on grandparents' visitation cases. They have very long, hour-long, multiple hour-long waits to file papers in the clerk's office or to simply come in and pay a traffic ticket. They have a situation where when it's time for their clerk's office to close at 4 o'clock, they have to go out and tell many people in the line, you have to come back tomorrow, people who've already waited some hours. They're struggling to find a way. They're anticipating approximately 1,200 new parole revocation cases per year. They have no new resources and are struggling to find a way to absorb that caseload. Their civil law in motion is absolutely overwhelmed by the volume that it has to deal with at this point, and there are no resources available readily to help with that. On the flip side, on the good news, they are engaged in a process to establish e-filing. Presently, they have up and running e-filing in their asbestos complex and probate cases. They're targeting e-filing availability for civil. Their target date is June of 2014. It appears that they're going to be on time and within budget with the existing resources that they have. Although they've had substantial layoffs, they've managed to hire 27 temps and have used those temps effectively to deal with backlog of defaults. And they've substantially cleared that backlog. And they've used that temp help in an effort to keep their e-filing program on target. They have an aggressive mandatory case management program in their civil side. They're getting lots of help from the local bar association, from volunteer attorneys. The result of this is they are tending to get their civil cases out to trial on a first trial setting. They've had good success with that. They're making efforts to establish a new Veterans Justice Court, a one-stop shopping concept. Judge Lee reports that they have good relations with their justice partners, with the District Attorney's Office, with the Public Defender, with the Probation Department, with court-appointed attorneys, and with the Civil Bar. In conclusion, it was certainly my impression that this court is benefiting from Judge Lee's good leadership. And I'm going to close with three quotes that I wrote down as I spoke with her over those hours. First, she said, we're making efforts to rebuild moral responsiveness and openness in our court. Second thing that stuck with me was she stated, we may be underfunded, but we are still moving ahead. We're trying to do more with less. And finally, and this is certainly a window into Judge Lee, she told me this institution will not die on my watch. And that's my report on San Francisco County.
Thank you, Judge Jacobson. We'll hear from Judge McCabe.
Chief, members of the Judicial Council, I have two reports, and
to keep within the time frame, I wrote them, so I won't deviate. The first is from the Madera Superior Court. The second will be the Fresno Superior Court, which I know its CEO, Sharon Morton, is watchfully watching me to make sure I get it right. So I'll start with Madera. On March 8, 2013, I met with the Madera Superior Court officials at their Madera Court facilities. The Madera Court presently consists of 9 judges and 1 subordinate judicial officer, a commissioner, with 1 vacancy. It has an authorized position under AB 159, which has yet to be funded or filled. Fiscally, Madera has an authorized budget of $6.5 million. The present year's revenues are $2.7 million less than they were in fiscal 2011 and 12. The fund balance is approximately $631,000, which is a reduction from $3.3 million in 2011-12 and $3.6 million in 10-11 fiscal year. Madera was one of the severely underfunded courts that received SAL monies in the years fiscal year 2005-06 through 2007-08 before it was discontinued. The current funding level is equal to the funding they received from the county in 1996-97 fiscal year. Staffing has been relatively maintained. The Schedule 7A filled positions in fiscal year 2010-11 was 102 compared with the current 97. The court system consists of facilities located in City of Madera and Bass Lake. The Madera Courthouse has experienced 2 fires in the last several years, which have caused significant damage to the facility. Use of portable trailers in a compacted configuration, which have interconnecting twists and turns, rival the Winchester Mystery House, but serve their purpose for the operation of the court. However, the outward appearance from certain vantage points resemble more of a prison than courthouse. Incarcerated defendants are led down the same narrow hallways traversed by judicial officers and staff. Furnishings in the jury room consist of plastic lawn chairs, which are not very comfortable. A once-used storage room approximating 8 feet by 16 feet was converted into a staff break room. The CEO, secretary, and other employee were responsible on their own time and money for installing tile, painting, adding a counter, and other finishing work before bringing in a table and chair. Apparently, watching PBS's This Old House pays off. A janitorial closet, approximating 4 feet by 20 feet, was similarly converted into an office for maintenance. The use of every available square foot of space has been accomplished. Storage of the court's records are maintained throughout the courthouse facility, and older documents are stored across the street in the historic jail using the jail sales and shower room. The jail facility leaks in the winter when it rains. There is a mold and mildew smell, and herds of cockroaches roam the secured plain. Thankfully, there is hope for the Madera Court. A new 4-story, 10-courtroom courthouse is being constructed across the street from the Madera facility at a cost of $100 million. At the time of my visit, the steel framing was nearly complete. Construction is scheduled to be completed sometime in the second quarter of 2014. An area of concern voiced by the Madera Court involved the construction of the new courthouse was that there was nothing budgeted for transition or startup costs, specifically costs to move from the old courthouse into the new, janitorial, security, mail, phone system, etc., were not included in the construction budgeting process. And given the severe fiscal erosion experienced by the court, the lack of funds presents financial barriers to Madera's operation in the new facility. Concerning technology, Madera is a managed court. They do not have IT personnel. Instead, AOC contracts for services for such courts. In Madera's case, it consists of a weekly visit, Thursdays, for both their Bass Lake courthouse, which is an hour's drive away, and Madera. If problems arise on any day other than Thursday, which is almost always the case, they usually but not always must wait. An example was their family law commissioner's laptop crashed, and she was unable to do the Department of Child Support Services calculations. Each DCSS case had to be taken under submission until the laptop was repaired. The court expressed its thanks to Jody Patel for her assistance in that crisis. Madera believes it can satisfy its IT needs by hiring some full-time employee at a lesser cost currently being expended by AOC on its behalf for IT purposes. To say the least, a once-a-week IT service isn't sufficient and certainly won't once the new courthouse is completed and they have relocated and are in full operation. Madera is on a sustained case management system. Like many other courts, it too is planning to obtain a new case management system to begin e-filing and a paperless or paper-on-demand system. The caseload for the court in fiscal 2010-11 was 31,000 total filings, averaging 3,500 cases per judicial officer, with a total of approximately 31,000 dispositions. The statistics for fiscal 2011 and 12 are not yet final. The court is accustomed to reallocating its resources. Although the judicial officers handle their individual cases, they also coordinate with the division supervisors by shifting cases between themselves to complete the day's work. Staff routinely shift to where the work is needed. Judicial officers draft and type their own opinions. The CEO and CFO have no secretarial support and are responsible for their own support work. Furloughs are used once a month, and a team rather than an isolated approach is utilized to maximize production. The Madera Court is the standard barrier for frugality. The court is appreciative of the invaluable assistance it receives from the AOC. Morale is high with its staff, and the administration maintains strong relations with its justice and work partners. The citizens of Madera can take comfort in the efficiencies employed by its court on their behalf. And then the next one is for the Fresno court. On Saturday, April 6, 2013, I met with the judicial officers, CEO, and assistant CEO for the Fresno Superior Court at their annual working retreat in Carmel, California. Notably, the expense for the retreat is borne individually by each judicial officer, except for the cost of the administrators, which is covered in the court's budget for the workshop. The Fresno Superior Court presently consists of 42 judges, with one vacancy and seven subordinate judicial officers, each commissioners. It has four authorized positions under AB 159, which have yet to be funded or filled. Fiscally, the court's annual budget is $51 million. The present year's revenues are $10.7 million less than fiscal year 2011-12. The fund balance is approximately $5.5 million, which is a reduction from $9.1 million in fiscal 2011 and 12 and $12.9 million in fiscal 2010 and 11. Staffing has been reduced significantly in the past few years. The Schedule 7A filled positions in fiscal 2010 and 11 was 550 compared to the current 410, a reduction of 140. The court system consists of the following facilities. The main court is located in the city of Fresno, and due to the budget impacts, it closed the satellite courts in the cities of Kalinga, Firebaugh, Reedley, Sanger, Selma, Clovis, and Kingsburg, and all in fiscal year 2012-13. Fresno continues to be the only court on the aging V2 case management system, and like many other courts, has begun planning to obtain a new case management system in the near future. Technology needs, in addition to the declining funding from the state, continues to be a high priority for the court. Technology may be the single greatest efficiency tool to stave off the decline in services due to an erosion of funding. Its importance can't be stressed enough. The caseload for the court in fiscal year 2010 and 11 was 211,000 filings, averaging 4,300 cases per judicial officer and 168,000 total dispositions. The Fresno court has sought, and with the Judicial Council's recent approval, has thereby obtained an innovative pilot project to leverage technology to maintain access to justice for its citizens in the outlying area of the county. With the closure of the satellite courts, citizens facing great distances, 70 miles plus in one way from Coalinga to Fresno, to access to justice. Some citizens neither have the means or the time to take away from work to travel to Fresno to attend court. The recently approved project, which permits traffic trial participation by way of video appearance at remote sites, provides an option for litigants to participate without traveling to the city of Fresno. Presently, Coalinga, using its former courtroom, and Mendota, using its city council chambers, have set up and tested audiovisual capabilities. A demonstration was provided for me, and I was impressed with the high quality for both the picture and the sound through court call. The audio is of such a high quality that simultaneous interpretation was and is possible with the system. The on-site screen has a four-way split screen showing the court, each party table, and the witness. Notices are being posted to publicize to the outlying Fresno County communities the remote site option. The cost is minimal and approximates $3,000 per site. A cost savings will be realized by the law enforcement agencies, too, given savings of officer travel time and mileage. The court has set guidelines for eligibility of video appearance. They include, one, if a litigant must travel more than 15 miles to the city of Fresno, they are eligible to appear and participate at either the Coalinga or Mendota facility. Two, the defendant has the option and election to appear in person or by video at one of the sites. Three, law enforcement also has the option and election to appear in person or by video at one of the sites. Four, the interpreter appears with the defendant at whichever site is chosen by the defendant. Five, exhibits are scanned by the city officials at the site directly to the court while in session. Six, the minute orders are emailed to the remote site for the defendant and or law enforcement officers. Overall, the equipment and idea are impressive and should be effective to minimize impediments, at least for traffic cases, which have been created by the budget shortfall and resulting closure of the satellite courts. I discussed with the court the new funding methodology being proposed by the Funding Methodology Subcommittee. Concerns were voiced about the slow implementation of the new model, specifically 10% for the fiscal year 2013 and 14, and the dire need that the severely underfunded courts are in, which are seeking an infusion of money as soon as possible. However, they understood the resulting effect on the underfunded courts, which would suffer for further losses through the funding under this new model. A desire to obtain information and a better understanding of the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, or BLS, was also raised. A question was raised whether there were efforts to democratize the council. It was pointed out that the council currently has one member from the Central Valley, which, next to the Inland Empire, has experienced both massive population and consequently caseload growth, and due to the neglect by the historic funding pro rata allocation system, produced severely underfunded courts. A representative council of the state's regions was the stated objective of the inquiry and desired action. Finally, an inquiry was made about the Strategic Evaluation Committee recommendations adopted by the council in August 2012 and whether their implementation was on track, ahead, or behind schedule. As I have expressed before, I believe the implementation timeline for some of the recommendations was and is overly optimistic due to the fiscal restraints. In all, the Fresno court is diligently working to meet the needs of its citizenry with its given resources. Innovation in technology and a desire not to be satisfied with the status quo has stemmed some of the effects of funding erosion. They are eager to work with the AOC and other courts to create innovative ways to fulfill their constitutional duties and responsibilities. Fresno County citizens should be proud of their judiciary. I note that the following information has been taken by the Fresno court concerning the fiscal crisis. Steps already taken include closing outlying court locations, 10 courthouses, one administrative building. They've laid off 6 reporters and 2 judicial secretaries. Mandatory furloughs of 96 hours for all employees for the last 3 years. Voluntary furloughs up to 96 hours for all employees for the current fiscal year. They've frozen vacancies, currently at 20%. Increased revenue collections through the implementation of an FTB collection program and civil assessment application process. Instituted a time to pay fee and increased the installment fee. Reduced operating expenses by 25% from fiscal year 2010 and 11 or 11 10 and 11 to 11 and 12, and 20% from 11 and 12 to 12 to 13. Implemented 37.5-hour work week for court reporters, 35 hours effective July 1, 2013. Freeze in combo promotions, freeze step increases, no negotiated salary increases for 2 years, eliminated bilingual pay, reduced court reporter work week to 35 hours, reclassed employees to lower classifications, eliminated tuition reimbursement program, allow employees to opt out of health insurance, eliminate personal day off, eliminate Lincoln's Day holiday, reduce annual leave accrual and institute a cap for new employees, renegotiate lower tech contracts, 1 year only now, reduce law book renewal orders, reduce janitorial service from 5 days to 3 days a week, eliminate county parking security contract, transition off county payroll, steps that they will need to take if the fund balance are swept, or lay off 30 additional staff just to operate without a deficit, lay off 70 additional staff to purchase a case management system. They will need to have money to buy the system, estimated to be between $5 and $7 million, reduce clerk's hours office, and possibly close another 4 courtrooms. In all, the impact is closing outlying courts impacts rural residents and justice partners. They cannot process their criminal and traffic cases in the same manner they have previously without a case management system, resulting in a catastrophic constitutional violation. The vacancy rate will go up to 42%. They cannot institute mandatory furloughs for employees in 13-14 due to limitations with their retirement board, and they will have no court reporters in civil, family law, and probate. And with all that good news, it was a pleasure meeting all those folks. Even though I've given you the dire portions, I found at each of these courts to have a determination not to be satisfied with where they were at and figuring out how do we get from here forward. And the citizens of California, particularly these counties, should be very proud of each of these courts. With that, thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Judge McCabe. We'll hear next from Judge Marianne O'Malley, reporting on 2 county courts as well, Alameda and Sonoma.
I have pictures. And you'll be happy to hear. It's only one court, Chief. It's just one court today. But I would like to say that I will be attending the Family Justice Center Courthouse ceremonial groundbreaking for Santa Clara. And that's Tuesday, July 16th, and I've been invited to that. And as their liaison, be very happy to share that with them and celebrate with them. So on April 17th, I had the good nature to be able to visit Judge Hardcastle's neighborhood. I met with the presiding judge, Renee Chateau, and the deputy CEO, Cynthia Martinez. They gave me a tour of the facilities. We discussed how their court was adjusting to the budget cuts, and then I met with the other judges in a beautiful family law courthouse that the county or that the court had built in a private partnership. And it's just a gorgeous facility that was under budget and planned very well, and it's a gorgeous facility that accommodates all their family law needs. This is a very well-run court. They are fiscally responsible. They're innovative in all aspects of running court operations and facilities. They presented me with a binder that I have with statistical data, operational structure of the court employees, challenges with an aging Hall of Justice. The facilities issues in Sonoma County for the Hall of Justice pose health dangers, and as well as just dangers to court users as well as those staff that work within the facility, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. They also provided me with a disc of photographs that I'll show you in just a moment, taken of the courthouse, and let me get to those. So the construction folks behind me can't answer this question because they're ineligible to be able to do this because they probably know the answer. $5 to anybody who can tell me what this is. It's not mold.
It's a gold deposit.
Okay, let's try a few more.
Algae?
Is it algae? No.
Is it an insect?
Ah, now we zoom in. What does that look like?
Bees.
Termites?
Termites, thank you. This pile is about 18 inches high, and it's below a manager's desk in an office. And it comes up annually. And if it doesn't come up underneath this manager's desk, they pop up elsewhere. The county has tried for years to be able to stop this termite infestation, and it just keeps coming up. And I just took the pictures and ran. I can honestly say I did not stop in that office. It was springtime when I met, and it was probably building, and they said, it's right over here. I said, okay, good, time for lunch. So here you go. In somebody's workplace, if you can only imagine. Okay, so now I've got to go back. We have more. I'm not giving you any more money. Okay. And Judge Hardcastle can help me with some of these. So this right here, if you can see, is a big stain on the floor. It's a recent leak in the civil division. You can see a bigger, it kind of expands over here. And oh, we all love that tent. We all love to see that in our workplaces. This is a recent leak in asbestos mitigation. This was a sewage pipe that was 10 feet under a concrete floor that broke. And now they're trying to fix it. Lovely. I ran by this place too. But wait, there's more. So this is not the design of the roof tile. These are leaks. And these leaks come through several floors. I'm also told that there are some toilets up here. That might account for this color. Again, the construction folks behind me can't answer that question either. And they did have some damages with these toilets and some leakage. Now, this is a huge leak that occurred, and this one, the county has yet to identify the source of this leak. Now, if you see right here, this is a water line. That is how high the water came up on this cubicle. And this damaged the ceiling tiles. It damaged flooring, computer equipment, court files, and court documents. Completely saturated the whole area. And they wouldn't let me mention the M word, the mold word. Lovely. Bear with me, Chief. So these are electrical panels also that were damaged. This is a transformer on the roof, consistently gets damaged, and so this is their way to try and stop that. Again, damage to the electrical panels, which is scary. I'll talk about an incident in one courtroom that happened. So I'm going to leave us with the termite pile, just so we can always remember what we're dealing with here. So Sonoma Court has 23 judicial officers. They have 20 judges and 3 commissioners and 1 authorized but unfunded AB 159 judgeship. They have a 24% staff vacancy rate, 50 vacant positions. For a court this size, it's just unworkable. In addition to that, with regard to the cuts and the kind of things that have happened that they've had to adjust to, the public has to wait 3 times longer for document processing. Processing judgments is now 4 months. Child custody investigations are no longer conducted, and time required to complete conservatorship investigations has doubled to 16 weeks. Wait time for mandatory child custody mediation appointments is 12 to 16 weeks. That's 4 times longer. Wait time to process adoptions, termination of parental rights, and guardianships is increased to approximately 4 months. Long lines at the counters and delays in service and traffic in the collections unit are wrapped around the building. They have 8 court facilities, 1 capital construction project that's been delayed to the year 14-15. And you can see they're not on the list because they need nice changes. They're on the list because they are in desperate need of a new courthouse. And this would be the Santa Rosa Criminal Courthouse Project. The existing Hall of Justice, as you can see, is physically falling apart. In courtroom 1, there's a constant mechanical noise. The county can't pinpoint it, so the judge just has to live with it. But a constant humming, loud humming, throughout the entire day. In April, courtroom 7 had an electrical explosion, which cut off power to the adjacent locations. The layout of the Hall of Justice is dangerous because of the manner in which they have to transport inmates to court. They do it through crowded hallways with victims, witnesses, jurors, and emotional family members. Especially worrisome for the transportation deputies is when transporting gang members for hearings and trials. Judges have to use public hallways to get from their courtroom to their chambers. This can be a concern after you've sentenced someone to a long sentence and leave out the same door as their family members. Weapon screening is inadequate and non-existent for the entire first floor of the Hall of Justice, which is used by jurors, staff, accommodates traffic court, and 1 criminal department. The criminal department that's on the first floor requires additional deputies to prevent escapes because its door opens directly to the outside. The entire second floor is open to the public view. Several years ago, a bullet was fired through the glass. But with all these obstacles, which makes working in this facility very difficult, these folks come to work surprisingly every day with a smile on their face. Except maybe the manager with the termite pile. I have to say, what a fabulous, fabulous group of judges. One innovative initiative that they took up, and we talked about this before Ellen Carlson mentioned this, was taking a closer look at the number of continuances and how that would impact the work of the court staff and the funds of the court. So the judges made a concerted effort to minimize continuances and have had great results. They've had less work for court staff, matters resolved sooner, more efficient court time, and money saved. And that's just to name a few of the positive results. They wanted to bring to your attention, Chief, and to the members of the council, that they're really concerned with the 1% fund balance that we're left with. Their court is using a 20-year-old legacy Unix case management system for all their case types, including criminal, family, civil, and juvenile. The traffic case management system is more than 20 years old, and it's running on an AS400 mainframe. I don't know what that means, but it just doesn't sound good. The existing IVR system is more than 15 years old, and many of the software components are no longer supported by the manufacturer. The court was planning to use their fund balance to implement an e-court case management system beyond traffic and gain further operational efficiencies and reduce county technology chargebacks. Without fund balances, this strategy has to be abandoned and curtailed substantially. Without available investing capital, they lose their opportunity to automate, streamline processes, and continue to make matters worse by using an obsolete county-operated case management system. While meeting with the other judges also at lunch and discussing their concerns, they wanted me to relay to the governor, the Department of Finance, and all the legislators, except for Assemblyman Bloom, because he gets it, that they just have to imagine that the other branches of government don't fully appreciate the serious, life-changing, and sometimes life-threatening matters that the judges hear every day there. People who can't get access will suffer serious injuries, medically, mentally, physically, and financially. They'd love for folks from the other branches of government to come to visit their court to see the people that this court serves every day. They have serious problems, or they wouldn't have to go to court. Then hopefully the folks in these other branches of government would fully appreciate that the third branch of government serves the public when they most need the help. So, Chief, I'd like to submit the binder to you and Judge Jarr. There are additional copies of the photographs in the binder, as well as more, and information about the Sonoma Court. Thank you so much for creating this program and allowing us the opportunity to go to these courts, meet with these folks. I had the opportunity to see old friends and meet new ones and learn how amazingly well these folks are coping under the stressful budgetary time. So thank you again, Chief.
Thank you.
And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Judge O'Malley. I want to thank all of the judges and all of the counties that have been reported on the courts, because it's so invaluable to us to hear this, and to see even pictures is even better. But it's a great opportunity for us, and I know the judges who took their time to do these liaison reports, it's invaluable. Thank you. We appreciate all that you do. And hearing this from the courts is invaluable to us as we go forward, and it's a great reminder of what we do at council, statewide perspective. Thank you. We also have, before I get to public comment, I wanted to take a moment to recognize someone who is, I think, is an unsung hero in the judicial branch, who will be leaving us, and wanted to take a moment to bring forward Harry Jacobs, a person whose work you know and appreciate, but this is the person behind that work, and I'd ask Kurt Child to introduce Harry and a little bit of what he's done for the branch.
Thank you, Chief, and members. And we have with us this morning the group of the directors of the self-help programs throughout the state who've been meeting for a couple of days downstairs as they're working on improving and sharing technology that improves the self-help programs that they're doing throughout the state. And they've really been doing some great work, and there's a lot of creativity that's going on down there on the programs. And a lot of creativity and a lot of the work has been done by Harry Jacobson. We have Harry with us today specifically for an award that he's going to be receiving from the self-help or from the Legal Aid Association of California. It's the Family Law Award for a court employee. So this year as a court employee, an AOC employee. Harry joined the administrative office of the courts a little over 10 years ago. 11 years ago, Harry. At the Center for Children, the families in the courts. And he was first a contractor pursuing his master's degree at the time, and then after went to work as a tax attorney at Morrison & Forrester. And Harry gave up that lucrative work at Morrison & Forrester to come to work to the AOC to use his skills in developing technology to assist low-income people with their legal problems. Harry was really responsible for developing the California Court Self-Help website. That's the first comprehensive statewide court self-help website in the country. It had over 1 million hits in the first week of operation in 2000 and continues to serve millions of people each year. It has won numerous awards and is considered the gold standard for providing legal and procedural information. Harry recently has been focusing on developing cutting-edge programs and creative use of technology to support self-help centers and legal services programs. In Los Angeles alone, the self-help center at Stanley Moss Courthouse runs 100 workshops a week, all of which are based on using Harry's interactive document assembly system, of which I had the opportunity a couple of days ago to sit through a demonstration. It's really pretty incredible. So if you think TurboTax is cool, this is cooler. And Harry also developed a program for neighborhood legal services program to help them with domestic violence restraining orders. And so this program allows volunteers at courts to help self-help litigants prepare accurate, complete restraining orders. He's worked with the Riverside Court to adopt this project to be used in churches, shelters, and other community agencies, dramatically expanding services, and this time particularly, as you just heard, as courts are being closed throughout the state. Inyo County is... Inyo County is using the program to allow people to complete forms with volunteers in tribal communities, which can be reviewed at the self-help center at the courthouse. And he's just completed a program with Batsetic Legal Services for their probate self-help project, at which the court prepares conservatorship pleadings. The agency reports that program saves a tremendous amount of time. Pleadings that used to, this is really pretty cool, and this is the one I saw a couple of days ago. Pleadings that used to take 4 hours to complete now take 15 minutes. And these conservatorship pleadings are, what, 50, 60 pages sometimes. So allowing them to assist more people more quickly. Harry's efforts have really transformed the delivery of legal services in California and has literally helped millions of self-help litigants. And I think as Judge Jarn noted yesterday, Harry is the AOC. I think, do we have from LAC, Denise and Patrick, who are going to present their award to Harry?
Thank you, everyone. It's an honor to be here with you all this afternoon to honor Harry Jacobs. My name is Denise Watt. I'm Program Coordinator at the Legal Aid Association of California. And I know so many great things have already been said about Harry. We are all very honored to be here with you today and to honor you with this award.
I want to thank the council for delaying your lunch break. I know that you're very busy and very tired, and I want to thank all the people who are standing on the wall there, all of the people at the self-help centers, because they're the true heroes. They're the ones that deal every day with so many litigants, and they make these programs work. And here, my boss, Bonnie Huff, and her boss, they're the ones that led us come up with different strategies and work with the courts and get things done, and it's been very gratifying, and thank you very much.
You know, I want to say, Harry, as I said earlier today in the lower level when you were being honored as well, you know, you're a man of many, many talents, and you could have done so many different things, and yet you decided to take your skill, your genius with software, and bring it to the public for access to California, and we are forever grateful for you doing that. Please come forward so we can take a picture.
Thank you.